No one should perform sankirtan on the streets of the city. Today I am excusing the offense and returning home. So, this was a Navadvip. Mayapur was dominated by Muslim leadership, so they didn't like it that kirtan was going on. So in this verse, he has excused them and given them a warning that this should not go on anywhere in the city. There should be no Nagar Sankirtan or street chanting, and you're excused. If it happens again, then there'll be trouble. Purport. Such orders stopping Sankirtan in the streets of the world's great cities have been imposed upon members of the Hare Krishna movement. This is Prabhupada speaking real time here. He's talking about when he's writing the purport, he's talking about what's going on in the movement. So this was 1975. So this is what was happening in 1975. Prabhupada is saying the same thing is happening to us. Our Sankirtan movement has been prohibited in certain places. We have hundreds of centers all over the world, and we have been specifically persecuted in Australia. I think also in the early days in London. Does anybody know? Arrested. And did you write Prabhupada? What did he say?
Well, I don't know what Prabhupada said about that, but now we are having the biggest Hare Naam every Saturday night. Dancing with Muslims, Christians, Jews, everybody joins in. They love it. They expect us to come there.
Jai, Hari Bol. All right. So somehow London didn't make it into the purport, but I remember it was happening. It definitely was happening, but especially in Australia. We have hundreds of centers all over the world, and we have been specifically persecuted in Australia. In most cities of the Western world, we have been arrested many times by the police. But we are nevertheless executing the order of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by chanting on the streets of all important cities like New York, London, Chicago, Sydney, Melbourne, Paris, and Hamburg. We must remember that such incidents took place in the past, 500 years ago, and the fact that they are still going on indicates that our Sankirtan movement is really authorized. For if Sankirtan were an insignificant material affair, demons would not object to it. The demons of the time tried to obstruct the Sankirtan movement by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Similar demons are trying to obstruct the Sankirtan movement we are executing all over the world. And this proves that our Sankirtan movement is still pure and genuine, following in the footsteps of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Hare Krishna. So Prabhupada says, we've been arrested on the streets all around the world. I can attest for that. I have 5 arrests on my criminal record. 3 on Harinam and 2 on book distribution. 2 on Harinam and 3 on book distribution. Once they didn't let me into Canada because they looked at my record. They said, you're a criminal. You can't go in. So because Prabhupada is he's talking about current events, I wanted to read, I searched some letters that have a similar theme about Sankirtan. And this is a letter to President in Australia. So now we're getting more real-time information here. Now, regarding the business of Sankirtan, the solution is simple. To go on with Sankirtan activities, as you have been doing, and let them arrest us if they like. We will not stop. Just like in London, they became arrested so many times. And there was so much public display of arresting that gradually the police stopped arresting. And now they have Sankirtan anywhere they like without any botheration. True? Yeah. If we take the case into court and spend so much money for big, big lawyers, and still if we do not win, then they have got a legal right to stop us. So better to forget the business of lawyers and judges and simply go on with Sankirtan. See, the general is speaking here. The Sankirtan general. This was the reason I wanted to read this is kind of bring you into the context of what it was like to be with Prabhupada. Imagine, like, put this in today's context. You're getting arrested, and you send a letter to your guru, and he says, "Just keep going on. You could get arrested. You can chant in jail, no problem." What would you think? Maybe I picked the wrong guru, or maybe my guru doesn't understand me. No, this is what Prabhupada is saying. Right? Yeah. Let them arrest you. No problem. Just keep going. So better to forget the business of lawyers and judges and simply go on with Sankirtan. This is civil disobedience movement. Let them fill their jails with us again and again, but we shall not stop our Sankirtan movement. Yes. Interesting, isn't it? You get an idea of Prabhupada's mood. Now, the verse we're reading here, this was the precursor to the civil disobedience movement. It was right after the Kazi said this. No more Sankirtan. You know what Lord Chaitanya said? Gather everyone and go everywhere with Sankirtan. That was his response. So now that's the same response that Prabhupada has. This was a threat of arrest, and Prabhupada said, go out there. This was a threat of arrest, and Mahaprabhu said, go out. In mass. So he was defying, and Prabhupada's doing exactly the same thing, exact same mode, right? So isn't that nice? See that Prabhupada's representing Mahaprabhu. Prabhupada is fearless. Don't worry if you get arrested. We can do Sankirtan in prison, no problem. This is the PS to that letter. There is no difference between chanting on the street or in the temple or in the jail. Right? You agree, right? No problem, right? Street, temple, jail. To us, it's all the same. A Krishna-conscious person is not afraid of any place, but he wants to chant constantly in all circumstances. Another thing Prabhupada says in the purport, which is interesting, he said that they want to arrest us is proof of the potency of the Sankirtan movement, because if we were insignificant, they wouldn't care. But because they care, they're a little concerned, that's a good sign. So, in the early days, when Prabhupada would say these things, then we would think, well, if we disrupt people and agitate people, that means we're bona fide. So almost like go out of our way to agitate them, just to prove that we're bona fide. That's not what Prabhupada means. He means you go on as ladies and gentlemen with your activities, but some people won't like it. And if they don't like it, as Prabhupada used to say, they're feeling the heat. Of course, we want them to like it, and we want to do it nicely and attractively and beautifully and so forth. But sometimes some people may not like it. And so Prabhupada didn't mind when that happened. He saw it. I mean, in one sense, he didn't want us to have a bad reputation. But in another sense, he saw it as they're concerned, they're worried. They see that there's some power there. So he didn't see it so badly. You may know that once there was a very bad article about us. I don't know the context, I can't remember. But in the article it said the Hare Krishna people are bad because they do this, the Hare Krishna people are bad because they do that, the Hare Krishna people are bad because they do this. It went on like 19 Hare Krishnas. There was another article that they had read previous to that, which was a more favorable article, and they only mentioned Krishna like three times. So they read both articles to Prabhupada. They said, and they read the second. They said, Prabhupada, this is a bad article. So they read it, and he said, count up how many times they said Krishna. They counted up like 17, Prabhupada said. This was a better article. Because anyone who reads this article will chant Hare Krishna 17 times. And they'll forget what the article was about. That's what he said. They'll chant Hare Krishna. It was a bad article. They'll forget, but they'll chant Hare Krishna. So it's not that Prabhupada was authorizing us to not do things intelligently and attractively, but he was also seeing things from a transcendental perspective, right? That. There's potency there. I'll tell you a story. Sometimes we see that people may not appreciate Krishna consciousness. And like you're saying, I mean, what you just said, Prabhu, was perfect. People were harassing us, and now they're saying, where are you? Why aren't you out every day? You know, when are you coming? It's like, isn't it? So I think Prabhupada understood that, that even in spite of their harassment, pious people would appreciate it. So don't allow the impious people to dissuade you. Keep going on, because it will be appreciated. And you can see the Qazi is saying, don't do Sankirtan, and Mahaprabhu has come to spread Sankirtan, so he's not going to say, okay, we just won't do it. Obviously not. This is what he came for, Yuga Dharma. So, that was Prabhupada's mood. So there was a man who didn't like us. He worked at the airport, and in the 70s, at least in America, the Hare Krishnas were very prominent in airports. And the problem was that airport workers, when they had nothing to do in between flights, they had nothing to do but watch us. And so they'd watch us, and they thought we were just out there to make money. And a lot of the devotees were, you could say, slick salesmen, or became slick salesmen, and people didn't think that was appropriate for religious people. So a lot of them grew to dislike us. Some grew to just see us as a nuisance, and some actually hated us. And so we were distributing prasadam about 100 miles south of Los Angeles at a rest area. We were cooking pakoras. And so we would take the pakoras out and give people samples. And one man was eating the pakoras, and then we filled up a basket, and he really liked it. And we were dressed in dhotis and saris. And then he looked and he saw we were devotees. And he's like, oh my God. He said, I am one of your greatest enemies at the airport. I break up your sales. I tell people not to take your books. He said, but these pakoras, these are great. I love this. Give me more. So it's not that because people don't like us in one arena, they won't like us in another arena. And we've come to see that people appreciate Sankirtan. They appreciate. And we may think, people think we're crazy or whatever. But so many people appreciate that in this miserable world and these very hellish-like cities, there are people who are chanting and dancing on the street. And that's special. When I was a young devotee, one young man knocked on the door in the temple. And he said, I want to join. And I said, why? He said, because I see you every day on the street chanting and dancing, and you're so happy, and I'm so not happy. And I want to be so happy like you are so happy. And he just came with his backpack. He didn't never read a book or anything. So, Prabhupada would not allow us to stop. I want to read some more letters. Here's another letter. We are prepared to hold Sankirtan on the street or in the jail. It does not matter. Wherever we are able to vibrate Krishna's name and be happy. So gradually they will grow tired of persecuting us. And just like in London and other places, we shall become established with our Sankirtan party. Now, I think something that is so interesting, I don't know if you've considered this, but when Prabhupada came to America, he didn't actually know what to expect. And, you know, and you see that in his poem on the Jaladutta. He didn't know what to expect, and he didn't know how Americans who were merged in passion and ignorance would understand Bhagavatam, which is completely transcendental. It's like, kind of doesn't make sense, does it? That you can just, you know, ride into New York, here's the Bhagavatam, and people would understand it. It makes sense they wouldn't understand it, right? So Prabhupada expressed that. And as you may know, things didn't start off so well, and so Prabhupada used to go and check out the schedules for the boats returning to India. He didn't really feel like it was going to happen. And he also thought that when he tells everyone the regulative principles, they're just going to say, no, just why don't you go back to India? We're not interested. That's what he thought. And I asked some of my senior godbrothers who were with Prabhupada in the early days, because this was my feeling, that Prabhupada didn't know. I mean, some people could say he did know because he knows everything and he sees the future and this movement was predicted and so forth. But I'd asked those godbrothers, and they were emphatic. He said, no, he didn't know. He really didn't know. But you see there's a transition at a certain point when the movement catches on and Prabhupada realizes this is actually the movement that Lord Chaitanya predicted. He didn't know that before. And then you see in his purports, he's talking about this is Lord Chaitanya's movement, the fulfillment of the prediction. And so you can see that in the purports here, in the letters we're reading. Like, this is the fulfillment of the prediction. It's going to happen. It can't be stopped. Go out, keep chanting, get arrested. And then what does Prabhupada say? They'll back off after a while. It's Lord Chaitanya's movement. So it's interesting from a historical perspective or a sociological perspective how you'll see if you study Prabhupada's letters and books, at a certain point, Prabhupada understands this is the Sankirtan movement that Lord Chaitanya talked about. And it doesn't seem like he really wasn't sure when he first came if it could catch on. And then when it caught on and so many people were coming, that Prabhupada understood, yeah, it's actually happening. And then all the purports, all the letters, this movement will spread, and all these predictions. It's quite interesting when you think about it, from that point of doubt to the point of, no, this is it. It's going to spread. So that's what he's doing here. As far as police problems are concerned, this is going on all over the world, especially here in Melbourne. They're being persecuted by the police. Even they are going to jail daily. But still they will not stop their chanting and distributing. When they go to jail, they refuse to eat the food, and in this way, so much public sympathy is there. So eventually the police will accept us, and our Sankirtan activities will go on unchecked. Simply, we must have the determination to continue our preaching work under all circumstances. So, same idea. So, I mean, what is Prabhupada saying here? He's saying, do what you have to do to spread Krishna consciousness. If you have to go to jail, so that's what you have to do. That was Prabhupada's mood, wasn't it? Put yourself on the line for Krishna. I think it's nice to hear this, hear what Prabhupada's mood was. Prabhupada was very happy when devotees took this mood of dependence. When the movement was starting around 1970, Shyamasundar Prabhu was traveling with Prabhupada, and he would send periodically letters with little pearls, statements of Prabhupada. And one of the pearls that we got, which enthused us tremendously, is Prabhupada said, anyone who will go anywhere and everywhere to spread this movement without considering how they will live, where they will live, how they will eat, I will take the dust from their feet and I will put it on my head. So that was quite inspiring. The next day we got in a van And we made sure we didn't have money. We made sure we didn't know where we were going to sleep and how we were going to eat. That was, you know, we were 20. But we wanted to live that life, and we lived it, and it was incredibly blissful. And so that was Prabhupada's mood. There's another story. Prabhupada was in Mexico, and at the last moment, they secured an interview on the biggest show in Mexico. So millions and millions and millions of people were going to watch. And they came into Prabhupada's room late at night, said, "Prabhupada, we just got the okay to go on this show, and it's broadcast at midnight. And we're going to have to, it was like an hour drive, we're going to have to leave now. And we won't be able to take prasadam, and you'll probably get back like 2 a.m. And we don't want to inconvenience you." And then so Prabhupada asked, "How many people?" Mexico is a city. Mexico City was like 20 million. So millions and millions, I forget the number, but millions and millions of people, when they told Prabhupada the number, he said, "Let's go." He said, "Prabhupada, you won't be inconvenienced." And Prabhupada said, "If I thought of my convenience, I couldn't preach." So Prabhupada just showed his, you know, it's like, do what you have to do. It's not about eating and sleeping. It's about what you have to do. So Prabhupada instilled that mood within us. And if you ever read stories of the great austerities that were done in the early days of the movement, you can understand why, because this is how Prabhupada was preaching, and this is what Prabhupada was doing. He was doing it more than we were. So we got in our van. Actually, we had enough money to buy petrol to get to the next city, and we arrived at the next city with no money. And we were so happy, because now we were fulfilling Prabhupada's order. And we went out on the street, 8 o'clock at night in Canada, in the middle of the winter. It was too cold for anyone to be on the street but the drunks, because they could stay warm by drinking alcohol. And so we did Harinam. This is, you know, we didn't know what else to do. You arrive in a city, you do Harinam. That's what we did. We didn't have book distribution in those days as a separate. So that's what we did. We did Harinam. And one drunk came, and we sold him a Krishna book. That was $8, enough petrol to get us to the next place. Now it's 9 o'clock at night. What do? We found a hostel. We knock on the door. "Welcome, come in. The whole place is empty. It's all yours. What do you want for breakfast tomorrow?" We ordered our breakfast. It was ready, 9 o'clock. Then we went out door to door. Knock, knock, knock. "Here are some books. And by the way, do you have any pots and pans? Because we don't have any." So happens we meet the aunt of a devotee. "Oh yeah, here's pots, here's pans. Whatever you need." We got so many donations, fruits, vegetables, hot plate. There we are. We could cook. We loved it, living on the edge. That we felt so happy. And Krishna always took care of us. And we felt so happy that we could report to Prabhupada that we're living on the edge and things are happening. And we go to the next city. All money spent in the last city. Where we'll stay, we don't know. We loved that. It was Prabhupada's mood. It made us happy. It was almost like, if we know where we're going to stay, it's not fun, it's not exciting. We're not on the edge, we're not getting mercy. So Prabhupada instilled that mood. And yes, we were ready to be arrested. It was just part of the program. And when it happened, it was like, okay, it's happening again. And we just knew Krishna would take care of us. It wasn't like once we were arrested, we would think, "Oh, I'm never doing that again." No, it was like, okay. It's an amazing story. I'm just telling these stories because I really think it's valuable for you to understand the mood we were in. And it might sound fanatic and crazy, but it was real and genuine. So there's a devotee distributing books at the airport, Pragosh. And he's not supposed to be there. And so the security guard is kicking him out. He comes back in, kicking him out, comes back in. So he brings him up to the office and he says, "Look, if you do this again, I'm going to have to arrest you and put you in jail. And Prigozhin says, that's fine. I'll get out the next day and I'll come back. I'm not married. I don't have a family. You can put me in jail. It's fine. No problem. And when I get out, I'll come back here and I'll distribute books. And when I come back, you can arrest me again. And that's fine. I'll just go to jail and I'll come. This is what he's telling you. And I'll come out and distribute books. And this man's like, I can't believe this person. Because, and then Prigozhin said, he said to this man, the man said, why would you do that? I don't understand. This is crazy. He said, because these books are so important and people need these books. These young people I'm distributing these books to, they need them. And it's so important. Even if you arrest me, I'll come out and do this every day. And Prigozhin said, look, do me a favor. Take this book, take it home and read it, and see if there isn't something valuable in this book. And if you don't think there's anything valuable in this book, then you can arrest me. And if you think there's something valuable and people need this, then you let me distribute books. So he meets the man the next day. The security guard or policeman. He said, I read your book. He said, okay, this is good. He said, but it's my job to arrest you, and I'll get fired if I don't. So this is the program. When you see me walking through the terminal, sit down, don't distribute books. I'll walk out. When I'm not there, you can distribute books. Because if my superiors see me seeing you and I don't arrest you, they will fire me. So this was kind of like, for us, this was just like what it was like. This was normal. This was just, you might hear this and think, well, that's amazing. We would be willing to be arrested. No, but that was just normal. That was what we had to do. You go to a mall, it's illegal, you're distributing so many books, there are so many people that are taking books, so you take the chance. Maybe I'll get arrested, maybe I'll get brought into the office, interrogated, or, you know, sometimes humiliated. But we would do it because we could reach so many people. Now here's another nice quote. Does that mean the curtains are going to open? Takes a while. I want to read this letter because it elaborates the mood. It's not about being arrested, but it's about Prabhupada's mood. Sankirtan will go on. It can't be stopped. Keep going. Get arrested. Eventually will be appreciated. That mood. You have asked whether nuclear devastation on this planet would affect the Sankirtan movement. Shishirara Gokula Ananda Ki Jai. You have asked about whether nuclear devastation on this planet would affect the Sankirtan movement. No. There is nothing that can stop the Sankirtan movement. We were in Canada, and the police stopped us from chanting. So I wrote Prabhupada, what to do? He said, just go out and clap your hands. If you can't play Mridanga and Karn, don't stop. Just go out and clap your hands. Don't stop. No, there is nothing that can stop the Sankirtan movement because it is the will of God Himself, Lord Chaitanya, that His holy name be heard in every town and village. Neither can the demons devastate the planet independent of the will of Krishna. Nothing happens without His sanction. If Krishna wants to kill someone, no one can save him. And if Krishna wants to save someone, no one can kill him. For our parts, we should be determined to carry out our mission against all opposition, demons, nuclear war, whatever. The whole universe is finally subject to certain annihilation by the will of Krishna. But devotional service is eternal and is the only certain way one can save himself from devastation. We can preach all over the world that the only way to be saved from collective and individual devastation is to take to the chanting of Hare Krishna. In short, the material world is a very precarious place. Therefore, we should always chant Hare Krishna and seek Krishna's protection. So, Prabhupada's saying, if it's Krishna's will, it's going to happen. Don't worry. Krishna will arrange. You know, we're always worried. Nuclear war, economic collapse, this and that. But Prabhupada here is saying, Sankirtan is meant to go on. Krishna will arrange it. Now, today is the disappearance day of Srivas Pandit. And it so happens that something similar was happening at the time of Srivas Pandit. And Srivas Pandit was very concerned. Srivas Pandit liked to do Sankirtan. He liked to chant. He was always chanting. And the Brahmins didn't like it. Because the Brahmins had a fear, because Srivas was always chanting, the Muslims were hearing the kirtan, the Muslims didn't like it, they would complain to the Qazi, and the Qazi would come and just stop Hinduism, just make it illegal. That's it, no puja, no samskara, no mantra, it's finished. That was the concern of the Muslims, of the Brahmins. So, they were very strong with Srivas Thakur. You shouldn't do this, this is wrong, this is bad. They wanted to stop it. And Srivas Thakur was actually quite concerned because he thought, maybe these Brahmins are right and the Muslims are going to come and they're going to come to my house and kill me. So he worshipped Lord Nrisimhadev. He had a deity of Lord Nrisimhadev. And he would go in his altar, in his deity room, and he would pray. Please, Lord Nrisimhadev, protect me. He was really concerned. He was really afraid. He thought, they're going to come and they're going to kill us or kill my family. So while he's praying, Lord Chaitanya is at the door knocking. He doesn't hear him. So Lord Chaitanya walks in his house. He walks in and he sits on his altar and manifests his Vishnu form. You know, you heard of the Mahaprakash where Mahaprabhu revealed himself, right? You know the story? Mahaprabhu is hiding his identity, but at one point he revealed his identity. But this was the first revelation. The Mahaprakash was not the only one. This was the first time he revealed himself as Vishnu to Srivas Pandit in his house. He said, Srivas, I am Vishnu. You don't have to worry because I am in the hearts of all the Muslims. And if I tell them not to disturb you, you don't have to worry. They won't disturb you. And even if they do, if they come, I will meet them on the boat and I will defeat them and I will prove that they're nonsense. Philosophy is useless. So you don't have to worry about anything. So Srivas Pandit, he loved to do kirtan. He was Narada Muni. Srivas Pandit, Srivas Thakur, Pancha Tattva, the only Jiva Tattva. All are Vishnu Tattva, he's Jiva Tattva. Or Shakti Tattva, he's Jiva Tattva. Narada Muni. So as Narada Muni, he's always chanting Srivas Pandit. He always liked to chant, right? So now something you may not know. Well, you do know that Advaitacharya, he prayed for Mahaprabhu to come, and it was become of the, we hear it was become of the prayer because of the prayers of Advaitacharya. He came, but he also came because of the kirtan of Srivas Pandit. That was the, those were the two reasons he came. Srivas Pandit was also chanting, please come. Same mood. The world is fallen. We need your help. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. He was doing kirtan like that, chanting, chanting. So, Srivas Pandit was, he was special. He didn't work. He didn't have a job. He was a grihastha. But he never had money problems. Do you know there's a purport in the Bhagavatam? An amazing purport where Prabhupada said, you shouldn't work. You should depend on Krishna. Do you know that? There's a purport. If you're interested in, I can email me and I have it written down. There's a purport and he says, you shouldn't work. You should just depend on Krishna. Spread this Krishna consciousness movement. He'll take care of you. Wow. That's a heavy purport. So Srivas didn't work. So Mahaprabhu once went to his house and said, Srivas, I've never seen you working. But you're eating, you have a house, you maintain a family. What's going on? He said, 1, 2, 3. He said, what is that, 1, 2, 3? He said, you know, there are two versions of the story. 1, 2, 3 is, well, if I don't get food one day, I don't get food the second day, then if I don't get food the third day, I take my family, we all go and drown ourselves in the Ganga. 1, 2, 3. You know. He said, but that's never happened. There's always food somehow. Now the other story is 1, 2, 3. I clap 1, 2, 3. If there's nothing to eat, then we go kill ourselves. The Lord has protected us. So, he was interesting in that. And as of course you know, those nocturnal kirtans happened at the home of Srivas Thakur. And those were very special, and nobody impure could be there. And this is where Mahaprabhu manifested the most intimate sentiments of the Brajbasis. And so Srivas Pandit, he was interesting and so surrendered to Krishna. During one kirtan, his son died. And so the ladies were crying. He's like, shh, don't disturb the kirtan. Be quiet. You know, naturally they would be crying. He says, no, don't cry. Don't cry. Shh, just be quiet. He didn't want to disturb Mahaprabhu's kirtan. So after a while, the kirtan, Mahaprabhu said, I think something happened here. Something bad happened. Did something bad happen? And Srivas Thakur didn't want to disturb him. No. Something bad happened. Well, my son died. Why didn't you tell me? Oh, I didn't want to disturb you. Take me to your son. So the son's dead. Wake up. He wakes up, you know, and starts preaching. And why did you leave? And your family's worried. And which father, which family? And this and that. You know, preaching philosophy. And then left his body again. So amazing, isn't it? Didn't want to disturb the kirtan, even though his son had died. So there are many leelas. There's so many I can't remember anymore. But there's a book called Prema Vilas. If you want to read more about the leelas of Srivas Pandit, you can find it there. Also in Chaitanya Bhagavat, you can find. So what time are we supposed to end? 8:30? Is that? Yes? What? Oh, okay. I thought it was 8:30. Oh, Sunday is different or every day is different? Oh my God. Okay. Well, in that case, let us read something. I didn't know I had that much time. Yeah. I'll read some. I have some of the leelas here I can read. Wait a minute. Before we go further, does anyone have any questions or comments so far? Yeah. When I was a what? Well, I know I was bailed out many times. I got out of jail on bail, so money was involved, but I wasn't involved in the money transaction, so, you know, yeah, we were breaking the law. They had, you know, we were breaking the law, trespassing or whatever. So, yeah, sometimes fined. Yes.
Seem to indicate
That's a good point. We could say, well, we definitely see there were doubts in the beginning because that's revealed in the prayer and confirmed by devotees. But I don't think those doubts remained that long because he established the International Society for Krishna Consciousness in 1966. But it's, every successful person does, they visualize. So Prabhupada was visualizing it all. So he had faith in Krishna. But in the beginning, those early days, there was transformation, but it still wasn't happening. I mean, I joined in 1969, and there were 17 temples and 300 devotees. So 17 temples, 300 devotees, average temple like 8. Big temples were 15 plus. Biggest were 35. Average 4 to 8. So it didn't look like it was really happening then. But as I remember, more towards 74, 75, 76 is when you get more of the predictions, more of like, yeah, this is actually happening. So as far as Prabhupada's vision at that time, it's difficult to say what he was seeing and how many temples he was seeing. But early on, I think even from the time that I joined, he was asking for 108 temples. Please open 108 temples. So he had that vision. And it's an interesting question when that transition took place from doubt to this is the movement. And there's a morning walk, and one devotee's quoting that the Senapati, Mahaprabhu will send his general, and he'll come and he'll spread Krishna consciousness. And they told Prabhupada about that. And Prabhupada very humbly said, you think they're talking about me? So it appeared as if it was like, there's the prediction, and am I the one actually doing it? So that was Prabhupada's, I think that was there also his humility. And his humility also was like anybody could do it. Anyone could have done it. You just had to follow the order. The order was there. In 1972, in a class in Los Angeles, I was at the class, and Prabhupada said, the movement will spread with you or without you. Some devotees were leaving. And so the topic of the class was about leaving Krishna consciousness. Obviously, don't leave. But even if you do leave, Prabhupada said, the movement is going to go on whether you stay or go. But if you stay, you'll get the credit. Like, you know, someone has to do it. Mahaprabhu will use people. So that was how Prabhupada preached. You know, he used me. I was willing. You're willing. He'll use you. You can do more than I did. So it seemed there was at some point, some evolution of that. So like you say, maybe the seed was there and it was evolving more and you could see it more. And if you want to read something amazing, like keeping in the mood of this class, that I think could transform you in many ways, is Rameshwar Prabhu was interviewed for Prabhupada Lilamrita, and there was 180 pages or something like that, 200 pages of transcriptions of his interviews. And it's available somewhere. If you go to his Facebook page, I believe it's there. Well, actually, if you go to my website, I think I posted it, mahatmadas.com, I posted it there. And he had many, many, many conversations about the future and politics and what the position of ISKCON would be and how we would influence society. Amazing conversations, and Prabhupada making amazing predictions about the success of ISKCON, about ISKCON saving humanity in its darkest hour, how the historians will note that because of our movement, we save society, we change the course of history. All these amazing predictions. Which is so interesting if you take it from the point of Prabhupada coming in 1965, not knowing if it can be successful, almost giving up, his books being stolen, no place to live, how is this going to work, people walking out, and then later on, his most trusted leaders leaving, breaking principles. then evolving to this 1976 conversations where Prabhupada's making these amazing predictions. So it seemed that as the movement was spreading more and more, Prabhupada was indicating this is the movement that Mahaprabhu predicted, and it is happening, and you all can make it happen. If you want, participate, and the Lord will use you. If you go, someone else will be used. Not because we're qualified, but because we're willing to be used. And that's what Prabhupada said about himself. I'm not qualified, but I'm willing to be used. And as you may know, that order to preach in the West was an order given to every devotee in Gaudiya Math. It wasn't specifically for Prabhupada. Right? So somebody did it.